It's Wednesday, August 26, 2009, and you're listening to episode 160 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
My name is Wayne.
And my name is Not New Guy.
We're happy to have Wayne on the show. Incidentally, Chad is out sick this week. His con crud turned into some kind of full-blown sickness, and he's actually supposed to be going to see a doc in the box tonight. For those of you not familiar with the slang term, it's just like an urgent care health clinic sort of thing.
He's a doc in the box. He's actually doing to me.
He's cutting a hole in the box.
That's right,
two.
Step one.
He's just slacking. He's bucking for workman's comp. I know what he's up to.
That's exactly what he's doing. But of course, the nice thing about him being here, or being not being here, is that we can completely and utterly pick on him. So
yes,
and
that's
a side
true.
Effect is when he is around now, he can't really talk.
Oh, that you got to be loving that.
And that's the thing, is because, yeah, now it's basically all up to you, Pat, to get on the rants and do all the other things because Chad's not there. I mean, I can only do my impression of Chad doing impressions of other hosts for so long. I can only say, I'm Chad talking about my being dead and yelling and complaining about things, and I'm smart and you're not, so let me just go on.
Capital ships are boring.
I'm Chad doing someone on Fear the Boot.
You know what, Chris? That impression was fantastic.
There you go. See, you've got the Chad thing down. That's excellent.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'm also happy to have Wayne on here. For anyone who's not clear who Wayne is, he's the guy from our weekly gaming group. Also, at one point, was Chad's boss, which I always found was interesting that having a Chad's boss in the gaming group, well, I guess it was a little easier because at least Chad wasn't GMing, so you couldn't hold him too responsible at work for whatever I did in the game that week.
No, but it was always at least a little bit odd. It's one of those things where you try to separate your work and your personal life, and it's one thing to go hang out with people outside of work, but it's really difficult to do that on a regular basis in something like actually sharing a hobby with them, being brought into a hobby
yeah.
by him.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a really hard balance to strike. I don't know if I could do that. I mean, I used to play games with people I worked with, but none of them were anywhere in a position where I was in a supervisory role to them at all.
During the week, I'm your boss. On Sunday, I'm just another guy.
Yeah, and you know, it obviously has worked out well, but I remember when Chad first came to us and said, hey, I know this guy. In fact, he's actually my boss. I remember looking at him saying, Chad,
are you sure you want to
bring your boss into the role-playing game just in case something were to happen?
And then he was all like, oh, it's going to be great to bring him in. I'm Chad. Let's bring him in on the game.
And he said, no, you don't understand. This guy, he's fantastic. And that's all
he's going to be a player. We have to trust him. He's a player.
That's exactly.
Well, fortunately, it all resolved itself because Wayne's been a great addition to the group and they did a reorg. And so now you're not his boss anymore anyway.
Yeah, you couldn't drop him as an employee fast enough, could you? It's like, this guy, I can't take him working for me anymore. I can't be this guy's boss anymore.
He still sits in the desk right next to me, though.
So for anyone that's interested, Julie Hussey has made an acceptance speech for winning the Power 16-2, which Chris sent to me earlier today. I have actually not listened to it yet. So even as of sitting here announcing it, I don't know the content. But we are going to chain that into the end of the episode. So if you would like to hear what Julie Hussey has to say about defeating Baron Von Badass with the help of you, the listeners, and your voting prowess, then stick around after the show to hear what she has to say to you guys about this great and important turning point in gaming history.
It's very, very critical. I'm excited about it. It was good. We had fun recording it, and it turned out to be very nice, very heartfelt. Hey, you know, as long as we're pointing things out, and this actually happened on the Tuesday, what is it, the 25th? But apparently, this is the anniversary day of the day that Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson first met each other back in the summer of 69, of all the years. And of course, then that was at Gen Con, as a matter of fact. And then history, you know, of course.
Wait, they met at Gen Con.
They I thought met they... At,
I thought they started Gen Con.
Well, no, I think if I remember my history incorrectly, I believe Gygax started Gen Con. And then I think...
back in the summer of 69. Yeah, they wrote a song about it.
Yeah. Actually, I saw somebody tweeted about that today. I got my first real D6s bottom at the time. But no, I believe they did meet, and it was the summer of 69, and so that was, they had their own summer of love, essentially, and then, you know, things went on from there, so.
You know, the whole thing about gaming history and the who's and dates and stuff, it's not that it's unimportant. It's not that it bothers me that anyone else is into it, it's just I personally don't care. So I just enjoy the hobby. I have no idea what the history, truth be told, is of a lot of these things. I'm learning it just because doing what I do, I'm around enough people who are into it.
That's important to know where you came from.
My mom.
I think we all know what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about Dan's mom.
So let's not talk about where I came from. Let's talk instead about comic books.
Were you C-section? Were you C-section or were you V-bag?
No, I was not a C-section.
You were breech, weren't you?
I don't remember what my birth weight was. The only thing I can tell you
is that your hair length was 2 feet when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They total Crystal Gale look.
It might explain a lot about me, but I was choked by my umbilical cord while being born.
The only thing I tell you about me as a baby is that I was an extremely quiet, easy kid. I was very easy to get along with. My parents will even tell you, my older brother, Tex, he was just hell on earth. In fact, one of the reasons they chose the name Michael for him, based on the name of the Archangel, it's like he came out casting out the devil. I mean, this kid just...
Tex?
Yes. Oh, yes. He just...
You know, I've only met him once, but he does not strike me as that kind of person. And I say that only because when he walks, his cheeks are clenched very tight. And so he does not strike me as someone who would be hell on wheels.
Oh, no. He screamed and wailed, and he was a real high-maintenance kid. I was reverse. I was super quiet. Teachers never complained about me. I mean, it was nearly impossible to get me to talk. And Tex was the 100% the opposite direction. But anyway, something that I want to talk about this show, which I have some opinions on, and I know, Pat, you've got some opinions on, but I really want to talk about, because Wayne is something of an expert in the area, is comic books. Now, my run-in with comic books is during the mid-90s. If you listen to Fear the Boot Bedtime Stories 3, you heard Chad talk about that guy's comic book shop we used to hang out at. And so during that time, I started picking up a few titles, would dig through the old bins, find things that looked interesting to me, became a fan of Iron Man, mostly because I like powered armor. It found some stories I enjoyed. I really loved the first couple issues of Wildcats before that story got really weird and pointless. I found some stuff that I liked, but never became a huge fan. I was a huge fan of the Heroes. I love the current round of movies. I love the animated series like Batman, Batman Beyond, Superman, the animated series. Even I haven't watched it, but the little bits and pieces I've seen of even the new Wonder Woman stuff we're doing actually looks pretty good.
I've had that with some characters for a while. Like, I was a big fan of Batman for a long time, but couldn't find any actual good stories coming out from him. I mean, basically, the 90s, there was a lot going on, but it wasn't a good time for some of the major characters, really.
I tell you, there are a couple hurdles that have kept me from ever becoming a big fan of comic books. And one of them, and we'll talk through some of these, but one of them is the fact that with a lot of these superheroes, they've been around for so long that really all they're doing is either A, retelling the same story over and over and over again, or reinventing the character over and over again, because Superman's been around 60 years, X-Men have been around 40 years, I don't know about Spider-Man, and I'm probably even a little bit off on X-Men and Superman, but the point is they've been around a damn long time, and they were not a limited run where they told 4 years worth of stories and stopped, and so either you have to keep retelling and reinventing the same story, or you have to go in these really, really bizarre, nonsensical directions to come up with anything new.
And what's worse is once you go down that path so far, you get to the point where there's no way back with a good story, where you have to do some sort of retcon or something big, something huge to bring it back into something reasonable. And then you have everyone complaining about the retcons.
Well, you know, it's something else that they did a lot. I know they did a lot back when I was in my collecting, like Dan was saying, you collected in the 90s. My comic book collecting was for a period of maybe 7 or 8 years in the 80s. So a little, about a decade difference. But what I remember is that any given, you know, superhero, whatever, like say your Batman or your Spider-Man, or even the X-Men, you had multiple titles. Like I know Batman at the time when I stopped collecting, I think I was collecting at least five Batman titles.
Yeah, there's
X-Men. There were at least three, you know, yeah, and that kind of thing. Is that still the case now? Is it even worse? Have they gotten any better?
Characters are still just as bad about it. They have gotten better around some characters. Like Superman still has four or five titles.
Uh-huh.
Batman-related ones, there's four or five titles. Spider-Man, they've got pared down to one title, but it comes out multiple times a month. Mm-hmm. And then they have alternate reality stories, other universe stories, things like that. But yeah, it got particularly bad for a while when each of those were sequential, where you would have four different titles and out of those four titles, the part of the story was in each one. So you couldn't just say, I'm getting Adventures of Superman, because the next part of your story is going to be in Action, or it's going to be in The Man of Steel. Or
you have actually just hit on one of the primary reasons that I quit collecting comics back when I did, which was right around 1990. And Marvel was the biggest culprit of this. It's what I call title creep. And maybe they still do it, but their big thing was in the summer, they'd have the summer crossover. They'd have the one storyline that crossed over into 20 titles. And if you wanted to follow the bulk of the story, you had to get most of them, if not all of them. So
I remember when
I first started collecting, I was collecting Batman and X-Men. That's all I cared about. That was like two titles. Within 3 or 4 months of collecting, all of a sudden I was up to like 10 or 15 titles. And then it just kept going because of this. It was the damn Marvel crossover.
Yep, and they definitely still do that. They do it every summer. There's a new crossover. There's a couple of websites out there that actually go out, take the time to figure out how much would you spend if you bought all of these. And we're talking every summer crossover is $300-$400 if you buy every title related.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it just gets insane. And they like to work in where you can't just buy the mini series that the title's in. Mm-hmm. You have to buy, you know, this individual issue has a major event happening. Otherwise, you won't know what's going on in the miniseries.
I mean, honestly, it's a brilliant marketing scheme.
No, I don't think it is. And here's why. Comic books are suffering from a very similar problem to role-playing games, even worse so, which is an aging consumer population. The fact is that if you go back to like when our parents or Chris were kids, they would go down and pick up their nickel comic. And this was something that they could get into. And then they carried that hobby on into adulthood. You know, in some cases, not in every case, but in some cases carried it on into adulthood. But right now, and you guys told me earlier that the typical titles between $2.99 and $3.99 a pop, so $3 to $4 a pop. Now, for someone like me as an adult, okay, I can say, you know what, I'm going to spend $20-$30 per month to collect a handful of titles. But if I'm coming in as a kid, where I only have an allowance of a couple dollars, I can't get into this. Because you take a look at a comic book, it's 22 pages long on average, I think, or at least the one time that I was messing around with writing scripts for one, that's what I was told. It's 22.
They vary. There's a lot of 22, but they've actually gotten lower on quite a few to add in more ads. That is a very frustrating
thing. So 22 or less, maybe more, depending on the title. But the point is that you have something that even if you sit there and admire the art for a while, you're going to consume in the matter of an hour or two. And yet for a kid, you may have just dropped all the money you had for this month on that one book. And if you get someone who's got a real passion for the hobby and a lot of money, they can follow that crossover. But this is not going to bring in a new crowd of people. And that's why I think it's a terrible idea to
I didn't mean that it was a good thing. I think it's evil. I think it's horribly evil because of what it did. But like I said, it's one of those things where you take somebody that's just brand new to it. They're tapping that resource. A new subscriber all of a sudden is going from just the two that he's really interested in to four or five because, oh, I read this other book and these characters are kind of cool. I want to keep going with them. So, and that's the other thing. You could always drop the books after the crossover, but to be honest, this isn't new either.
Sometimes they were written well that, you know, it's like, oh, hey, maybe I'll pick this title up, you know, and to go on that though, Pat, it is a good marketing ploy for their core group of readers. Yeah. If Dan's right, for new people, it's bad because A, you're suddenly thrusting all these titles in their faces, and then B, you got a confusion factor going on. where it just doesn't, you know, it's like, whoa, I'm completely overwhelmed. It's like, you know, in RPGs, it's the same thing. It's like dropping a 400-page rule book in front of somebody and saying, hey, have fun, you know, as opposed to hitting with some quick start rules, you know, where they can kind of get used to things.
And it might seem new, but it's really not new if you look back at it. You had things like Secret Wars, you had Crisis. They've been doing this all along. They're just doing it more often. They're doing it every summer instead of every other. And it also may be a fact of we're all older now. We think, you know, this is cutting out the younger readers. But if you think back, when I was still first collecting, I would go in every week and I would complain about the titles going from 99 cents to, you know, $1.99. And it's, you would go in each week and it's like, okay, which title do I get this week? Which do I get next week and hope that nothing good comes out next week?
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus now when I just go in and spend my paycheck.
Yeah. See, you still have that problem. I had that problem when I was a kid, spending my allowance on it. And like you said, now you do it. You have a problem as an adult. You spend your whole paycheck.
Yes.
I live paycheck to paycheck for my comics.
And this is really where some of the trade paperbacks fit in, too. Like Dan mentioned, not wanting to go into a store and actually talking to the people, having the conversations. Well, now they're more mainstream. You can go into Barnes & Noble. You can go into Borders,
well,
pick up a trade paperback.
That's one of my... Now, the trade paperbacks, absolutely, because I don't have to go in every week. I could go in and pick up a year's worth of a comic in the form of a trade paperback or a particular...
And you don't get multiple covers and you don't get foil covers and all the trappings of the industry that are really coming back
but,
now.
You know, for me, that is, generally speaking, one of the hurdles that has kept me from getting back into comic books. I have enough money, like I said, to buy some titles. I have enough free time to read some titles, but I'm a lazy son of a bitch. I order things from Walgreens online and have them delivered, okay? This is the type of person that I am. I do not want to have to go down to a local comic shop, create a pull list, go back every week, have obligatory conversation with the fat beard behind the counter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just to pick up a couple titles. Is there a service online where I can do like an online pull list and they just drop a box on my doorstep once a month or something that has all of my stuff?
There are actually quite a few. A lot of comic shops do that and they'll mail it to you. You can get a subscription straight from the company sometimes. For the trade paperbacks, there's a website called In Stock Trades, and they have basically discounted trade paperbacks.
Mm. Yeah, and this actually kind of, I'm going to use a title here to bridge into the next little point I want to raise about comics. But I have considered getting a subscription to just one comic book, and I'll put quotes around comic book because it is and it isn't. It's not a traditional sort of comic book, but it seems to be the best of every world, which is heavy metal. Because with heavy metal, you have a diversity of stories. You don't have the same stories being retold, retold, retold. You have a diversity of art styles, a diversity of storytellers. And on top of that, it's got a real consistent release schedule. I believe it's one per month. You get it like you would any other magazine, so it's just stuffed right in your mailbox. And, you know, granted, some of the stories are gratuitous and stupid and or vacuous or whatever, but there's also been some really neat stuff that's come out of heavy metal. But where I want to go with that is one of the other problems I think exists within comics is something that also exists within RPGs, which is a perception problem. If you ask a typical person on the street what a comic book is, what they're going to describe is probably Superman, Batman, Incredible Hulk. It's some kind of a very far-out superhero fighting supervillains. And that's not necessarily the case. Because
I know, I have seen people's jaw drop when I tell them movies like From Hell, Road to Perdition, Ghost World. These were comic books. They were trade paperbacks. They were graphic novels. And a lot of people don't realize that there is a lot out there besides superheroes. You do say, which there are a lot of superhero ones out there, and but you say comic books, that's the first thing people think is spandex.
Yeah, exactly. And yet it's not. Comic books really, it's a medium. Just like a novel or a movie is a medium for many kinds of stories. Yep.
There are horror stories, there are Old West stories, there are detective stories, there's pulp stories, there's sci-fi. Pretty much any genre you want can be found within it.
Wayne, something I would love to hear from you is a list of some of the best-kept secrets of the comic book industry. Through chat, he talks to you. I then go out to Scottish Arms or whatever and start talking to him. And he tells me about some of these really neat titles you've introduced him to that I have never heard of. You know, I know Iron Man, I know Batman.
The big one I keep hearing him bring up on the podcast has been The Boys. The Boys was one that started off with a company called Wildstorm that was a subprint of DC, basically. And the concept is when superheroes get out of line, these are the guys that step in and they bring them back into line. It is a very violent, very bloody, a very adult book in many ways, to the point that when Wildstorm first published it, by the time they got to issue number 6, DC came up to him and said, "You have to stop publishing this." They wouldn't let it continue running under one of their imprints. So they let it out. Another publisher picked them up, and they're still going strong ever since. But it was one of those things where the book was so... basically, it was taking the superhero and tearing it down so much, DC just couldn't let it continue under their print.
And then you get the books that really aren't about superheroes at all, like Fables.
The basic concept there is all of the fables from our, you know, bedtime stories, children's stories, the Three Little Pigs, Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, the Big Bad Wolf, all of them are real characters. They lived in another world. A character called the Adversary came in, took over all their worlds, and they had to run to our world to get away. And it's no superhero, no spandex. It's them living their lives, dealing with the fact that their homeland's under siege.
I've got a question for you. Everybody knows the two big ones. You know, you've got Marvel and DC, but you've also got some of the smaller, you know, I guess houses or whatever, or maybe in they're part of the big ones. Like, I know back in the day, for me, it was like Dark Horse Comics. Who are the ones to really look for? Like, who do you think puts out some of the best stuff that's not just the mainstream stuff?
Okay. Well, Marvel and DC is definitely still around. They both have their imprints, their subtitles as well. Dark Horse is still around, and they've actually done quite a bit in the last few years. I'm not sure at what point, but they really kind of restructured and brought some good titles to front. There's a company called IDW that has a lot of properties. They're doing some pretty good stuff with Transformers right now. Really, a lot of the same players are still around. Image is still here. You've got Valiant folded up quite a while ago. They were bought by Acclaim. And
speaking of Image Comics, one of the things I noticed, because one of the comics I've read off and on is Walking Dead, and I definitely enjoy it when I do read it, but it seems that Image has kind of almost like changed their tune in regards to things they look for, because I remember reading one thing specifically where they talked about, and maybe this was on their website, I can't remember exactly, but they were really actively seeking submissions from, you know, outside of their own doors. And, you know, and they really were seeking ideas, and they had certain guidelines as to absolutely what do we not want. I mean, is that common for them to do that, for to seek outside of things, or, you know, and I mean, I could see why you'd do it.
It was for a while until the economy crashed. And when the economy crashed, they've kind of gone back to their bread and butter. It is interesting, though, that you mentioned Walking Dead, because the writer of that, Robert Kirkman, is actually one of Image's founders now. He wasn't one of the originals, but they brought him on board, and he's one of the guys actually running the company. He has multiple books coming out, and he's trying to get kind of a new flavor to him.
Speaking of Walking Dead, that's actually been optioned for a movie, if I remember correctly.
I would get excited about that, but in this day and age, everything is optioned for a movie.
That's true. Pat has been optioned for a movie as well, I just recently learned, so congratulations on that, man. That's awesome.
They already made my movie. It was horrible.
It has gotten so bad at this point that a friend of mine and I actually were given a spoiler about an upcoming comic story because they announced the movie was coming out. They explained the whole storyline when only 2 issues had come out yet of the comic, and it was already optioned for a movie, ruined the whole end of the storyline for us.
Huh.
You know, it's actually, when you think about it, that is actually true, especially when it comes to games. This year at Gen Con, we really kind of saw it. One, they're trying to get Brave New World made into a movie with their proof of concept thing. And then, what's that, Midnight, for the Midnight campaign setting, that Fantasy Flight, that's an actual movie that came out that they produced. I know that there's been talk for years about a Deadlands movie.
Riffs.
And then, of course,
I don't know why they haven't done a Call of Cthulhu movie yet.
Well, you know, they actually do, because there are Cthulhu-based movies out there, but it's, you know, not specifically on the RPG, but there are, you know, Lovecraftian, and I don't follow that genre at all, really, because it doesn't really do that much for me, but there are, you know, Cthulhu-based movies, and of course, there's always been talk about, you know, a Battletech movie, a MechWarrior movie, of course, you know, we've already had the Dungeons & Dragons movies, but...
Oh, I saw a great one the other day, too. It was on Sci-Fi, or Syphy, now that it's known as...
Syphilis?
Yeah, there you go. It was Dungeons & Dragons, The Wrath of the Dragon Lord,
oh,
or something.
Yeah, that one is actually, that one's
you're
not
right,
bad.
It is horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
Yeah, but compared to the original.
Oh, I don't know.
If you think that one was bad, go track down the original.
Oh, yeah, go track down the original.
Oh, my gosh. It was...
And then basically spend the entire movie going, why Jeremy Irons? What was he thinking?
Why the blue lipstick? Why anything? Why the cardboard cutout Wraith?
Jeremy Irons. You know, he's such a wonderful actor. I love the guy, but he has done some really, really bad
things. Pat, we're going to sit down. We're going to sit you down someday, and we're going to show you the original Dungeons & Dragons movie. I'm not going to go there again because we did a reaction episode to it. And I'm not going to repeat that, but holy crap, was the movie incoherent.
It at least was better than Incredible Hulk.
Hmm. Oh,
actually. There were no Hulk dogs.
Chris, I
yes. What?
Since Chad's not here, I got to put this all on you. But you owe somebody an apology.
Oh yeah, that's right, apology. You know, goodness, you're kind of throwing me here because it's not the beginning of the episode here where we do this. A little bit of an apology.
What's that? Cover Chad's mistakes.
That's right.
At the beginning of the episode,
I'm just Chad, and I made a mistake.
You know what though? It's fantastic.
I'm just excited. My first time sitting here, and I get to be part of an official Fear the Boot apology.
Hey, yeah, there you
that's
go.
True.
It's
that's
a tradition.
True.
They don't happen as often as they used to. But this one's Chris's fault. Chad's fault.
This one's totally Chad's fault. I'll completely blame him. Last episode in the Gen Con recap episode, such as it was, we kind of gave a shout out to a listener who we ran into on accident at Gen Con, and she was wearing a Fear the Boot shirt. And Chad and I just happened to pass by her accidentally in the exhibitors hall. We went back, talked to her and her father for a little bit. And I'd gotten her name as Brienne, and Chad had pegged her as being 12 years old. Well, she is also a member of our forums, and her name is actually Rhiannon, and she's 16. So I was closer. I was much closer than Chad was.
I would say, yeah, of the two of you, you were much more toward the right than Chad.
Well,
and his disparity
of
age.
Go up to any 16-year-old, get their name wrong, gauge the reaction. Now call them 12 and gauge their reaction.
Oh, man.
That'll tell you a lot about what they care more about at that particular age.
Yeah, precisely. I think pretty much consistently number 2 is going to get the reaction.
I, of course, apologized to her when she sent me a message about it. I mean, her message was more really to thank us for giving her the shout out, but then also just to point out the fact that, hey, you're an idiot because you got this wrong. But then she was still, she was very grateful to have run into us. And of course, she's also very thankful to the podcast in us being as good as she is. And she's actually an indie booter, and I don't mean playing indie games because such things don't exist.
Right. He means that she listens to the independent version of Fear the Boot as opposed to the corporate version, which you're hearing right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yes. I hear the independent version every day. It's in the cube next to me.
Yeah, there's a small press spin. There's a bunch of small press spinoffs, all D20 versions, mostly in PDF, but you can find them wherever.
Yeah, we are soon. Awesome. We'll be available with Savage World stats as well, once we get that license worked out.
Right. Let's talk RPGs. Today, what I want to talk about is helping get a new gamer situated in the hobby. Now, let me set an immediate barricade on what we're not talking about.
Give him D&D. Next topic.
What we are not...
D&D is horrible. It's not fantastic.
Too many rules. I don't use rules and dice and paper in my game. We just sit around a fire and tell a story. And then I make things up.
D&D is a war game. All it is a dungeon crawl. You cannot tell a story with...
And if you've got players... You can't trust the bastards.
That's right.
And a DM screen is only good for folding over and hitting the DM in the head with.
Serve slices of pizza on a DM screen. That's the only thing it's good for.
Next issue.
Chad has to be gone more often.
Chad's going to be back to defend himself soon, but actually, if the things go the way I think they're going to go, the next episode's going to be a torrential war between Chris and a non-Fear the Booter, where Chad may not get a word in edgewise. So we're going to see how that goes. But let's get back on topic to what we're talking about
Chad
today.
Chad doesn't listen to this. He won't have any
That's
idea.
That's true. He'll never have any idea.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Yeah, he never listens to the podcast. He'll just read these forum posts like, what are they talking about? I don't understand.
Damn, that's good, dude. That's very good. That really, you've got the kind of the wispy, airy tone, you know, where I'm making fun of people tone. You got that kind of that wispy, I can't believe it tone.
What? I just don't understand. Why does everyone think I hate everything?
So what we are not talking about here is we're not talking about convincing someone to pick up the hobby. It's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is you have gotten someone to join the hobby, but you are bringing them in for their first time and trying to get them acclimated to the hobby. And this is a subject I want to talk about. I know we've hit on in previous shows, but we have a really great perspective here because, Wayne, you've been playing RPGs for less than a year.
Yeah.
In fact, you played your first RPG in our Sunday gaming group previously in 2009 or maybe late 2008.
It was late 2008.
Late 2008. December. Okay. And then attended Fear the Con 3, or 2, rather, shortly thereafter.
Actually, the only D&D game I've ever been, Chris ran at Fear the Con.
Wait a minute, did you sit at my table?
I did. I was in your beginner's game. My wife and I were.
He was also in my Transformers game.
Oh my gosh, now I feel really stupid, because I'm like, I have no idea who this Wayne dude is. Which character were you?
That's because you're senile.
I know.
I was the one that your ogre couldn't hit.
You were the which one?
That was not a sexual reference, Chris.
No, the Skype was breaking up. But you were which one?
I was the character your ogre wasn't able to hit.
Okay, I think I remember. Now, you were sitting on my left side, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Okay, yeah. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So, all right, what I want to throw out as I was thinking about this was a couple bits of advice I came up with on getting someone acclimated to the hobby. And, of course, Pat and Chris, I want to hear what you guys have to say based on your experiences. And Wayne, as someone who has recently joined the hobby, you have a very, very fresh perspective on this. Now, see, when I joined the hobby, it was a purely insular experience amongst new players. I picked up Fast Star Trek box set, as I've mentioned many times, and everyone I was playing with either had never played a role-playing game before, or in Chad's case, I think had played one session. It was not like I suddenly joined a group of veteran role players. Now, Chris and Pat, what was your guys' experience? Did you join veteran role players? Did you guys pick this up fresh with friends?
My experience was this. It was just three friends, and only one of those friends had ever role played before. And it was actually the guy that I've talked about as my first GM in previous episodes. He was the one who had role played before. And I don't know if he was necessarily a veteran because we were all the same age. We were 16.
Right.
But he knew what he was doing. My friend and I didn't. We'd never role played before. And we started playing second edition D&D.
So that's what
we started with. Right. And we were essentially brand new with the GM's help of, well, this is what we're doing, and roll from there.
Chris, what about you?
I started all brand new and fresh. Both me and my friend Shane, we got the red box for Christmas. The old, you know, the old regular Dungeons and Dragons basic set. There was kind of a solo adventure in there to kind of teach you some mechanics and things. And that kind of got us acclimated to kind of what you had to do. But then our friend Eric down the street, he didn't have it at all. And so basically I loaned him my DM's book, and we made him DM us through an adventure. So for all of us sitting around there, it was all brand new. And we stayed that way for quite a while until Shane had met some other people through work who gamed and did advanced Dungeons & Dragons. And then we kind of moved into the whole AD&D from there.
So here's a couple pieces of advice that I came up with on how to get a new player acclimated to gaming. The first one, and this has multiple parts to it, is take absolutely nothing for granted. We as gamers have a culture that we are so used to, I don't think we even realize that at some point we learned it or at some point we didn't know it. And so be very aware of, for example, terminology we use, even saying things like roll 3d6. Slow down and explain that. In character, out of character, NPC, PC, DM, GM. This is all terminology that is going to be foreign to this person. And so slow down to make sure they understand that.
You know, and there was some of that in my first game, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Because going in, I had listened to Fear the Boot episode 115. And I listened to that quite a few times. I burnt a copy of it, played it in my DVD, or played it in my car in the CD player. And it's gotten to the point now that I hand that thing out anytime anyone asks what a role-playing game is. It really is a very useful resource. Basically, there were a lot of preconceived notions that were completely wrong. The idea that you can have a game like this where everybody is the winner, where you're not trying to win, you're not competing against each other, you're working together, that was a completely foreign concept.
The second thing I came up with along the lines of take nothing for granted is slow down and explain the rules. One of the things you want to be really sure is that the new gamer feels like they're on the inside, feels like they're a part of things. You don't want them to feel like they're on the outside of some kind of clique or culture looking in. And if you're just blowing through whatever the rules of the game are, combat, social situations, doesn't matter what those rules are. But if you're just blowing through them and just pointing out stats and telling them to roll them without explaining it, not slowing down and telling them what their options are during a particular round or what various things they have on their character do, then ultimately this person is going to feel confused. They're going to feel like they're on the outside.
I know every time I had to ask, what do I roll for this? What do I roll for that? It was basically, it killed the immersion in the game. It made it hard to get back into character because it was kind of, I should know this. Everyone around me knows this.
Along with that, because this is something that's sort of come up in our new game, I think something that would be important, is, especially for the new gamers, is stick with a system for a while with the new one. Don't do a lot of system hopping or rules hopping. And, you know, like trying something new, like going from Savage Worlds to some other, you know, like to D20 or to something else like that. Because I know what you just said, Wayne, is in our current Sunday game, I don't even know what it is we're using, mainly because I don't care to learn it. Whenever we need to make a roll, I just look at Dave and say, what do I need to do? And do it, because I'm sort of to the point where I don't want to learn a new system.
You know, that was,
and I think it can be, you know, overbearing for, or it can be overwhelming for new people.
That was one of the things going into Fear the Con last year that, well, I guess earlier this year, that I was really looking forward to. I had experienced Skies of Glass. That was one game. I was having a lot of fun with that one game, but I knew that wasn't something that's been out there for, you know, for all of these years. It's not something, you know, not one of the published ones. It's something new that's being worked on. So I wanted to go into Fear the Con and be in as many different types of games as possible, just to get what is out there, because I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Systems like the D20 system kind of have an advantage over other systems in the sense that there is that single unifying mechanic. You don't really have to necessarily too much about which dice to roll, which combination of dice to have to roll. You roll that one particular die, and then the trouble just comes in finding what you need to add to it. You know, and so there's a slight advantage to systems like that. You know, that doesn't necessarily make them better, but for new players, it can help ease a little bit of that transition.
You know, this might have been just me, but it was one thing coming into the hobby. You do have this impression of all these different dice that are being rolled. And when we started out in a system that basically used one type of dice, it was kind of, I want to roll a variety. Yeah. Yes, I realize it's just rolling dice, but there was something about it going into the system we're doing now that it was nice that I have all these dice and I'm actually getting to use a variety of them.
Well, I say one of the historically weird quirks of gaming is the number of non-gamers, girlfriends in particular, that will collect the dice even when they don't play the games, just because they're aesthetically pleasing little objects. They're quaint and quirky little things, you know, these polyhedral dice. Talking, though, about whether to jump between systems or not, and Pat, you suggested don't do it, and Wayne actually said he enjoyed doing it.
No, I would say don't do it if you're trying to bring someone in. As a new player, though, I wanted to see what else was out there. I think you need to be able to talk to the new players about that. You need to give them the opportunity. But I would say definitely don't switch around, because I felt much more comfortable once I learned the rules.
Yeah.
I wanted to go out that myself and find out about more. And yeah, Fear and the Con was my opportunity. If we were jumping around in mid-game, I don't think I would have I don't think it would have taken as well.
Well, and I also guess by the time that Fear the Con rolled around, you had been gaming with us, I guess, almost 4 months. So while you were hardly a, you know, 20-year guy, you weren't brand new to it either. But I guess really the main point that I would drive home there is the necessity to explain things, to make sure that the person understands that. I've had new players, for example, in the case of like Carla, my wife, where she'll get overwhelmed even by the character sheet. And
that is definitely the case for me coming in. Before actually playing the game, going in, I had no idea what to expect. So I went out, I looked at books. I'm looking at like the Hero System character sheet. Looking at the Savage Worlds character sheet. I'm looking at all of these books, and I was completely overwhelmed. It's like, I don't know how you run this game. Mm-hmm. Now it makes sense. Now I think I could use all of these. But at the time, looking at it, I had no idea how any of that worked. That's why I was really glad that you walked me through the character sheet in that first game. Even without playing that week, we just did character creation that one day.
Well, in Carla's case, her first game was actually the same as my first game, albeit, you know, 15 years later. But her first game was Fast as Star Trek. And if anyone's ever seen that game, it has a very bizarre character sheet, with a lot of stuff on it, and interpreting some of it can be very difficult. And if you just throw that at somebody, and then you start doing what you've always been doing, and never slow down for them, never teach them, never explain anything to them, you are going to alienate them. You're going to frustrate them.
And I even noticed that some at Fear the Con, there were, like, I was trying as many different systems as I could, and some of the character sheets, I understand D&D is supposed to have a lot more involved with it, but that was very, everything made sense. I think that was partially the GM was just so good at presenting the material that I knew what to roll, I knew what was going on, when in some of the other games, some of the other systems, I didn't necessarily understand what was on my sheet, even though I'm told they're more simple systems.
Part of that kind of bleeds into if I had one major piece of advice to give like that, and I don't mean to jump into your list there, Dan.
Oh, no, by all means.
But a lot of it for me would come down to, I mean, because everything that you've said has definitely made sense. But I would say related to all this, too, is kind of a know your audience piece of advice and know who your players are and what their, you know, pace tolerance would be. You know, a real good example would be my kids again this time. My son and his friends, when they first started out, they basically really got into the whole idea of beating the crap out of things and taking their loot. Kill monsters, take the loot. All right, that's fine. But when my 13-year-old daughter and 8-year-old daughter want to give it a shot, that's a completely different audience. And I don't mean to get into gender stereotypes, but basically they end up rolling dice maybe about twice during the entire session. And otherwise, they just RP'd. And they just walked around the festival and partook in everything that was going on there, as opposed to, you know, running around the sewers and killing kobolds or something like that. It was very, very different pace thing. And accomplishment-wise, they didn't really accomplish a whole lot, but they had a good time. You know, and they got to experience and get immersed in the system and in the world that they were doing, but they didn't really do very much, you know, over the course of time, as opposed to, you know, the boys who ran through an entire module or something.
And, you know, I have noticed in some of our games that sometimes the most fun we have are the weeks where we don't really advance the story at all. There'll be a little bit here and there, but it'll be just the interactions between our characters.
I also think it's important to make sure that they have the feeling that their character is special and needed. And one thing that you have to be aware of, just like with the rules and the lingo and everything else, is they may not realize where or how they're needed, and you can't presume they're going to discover it on their own. So, for example, if the guy has a high computer skill and you get to a point where there's a locked door, you might nudge that guy and say, hey, you know, you've got a skill here you can roll to try and hack that door and get past it, and make sure they're aware of that. Wayne, in the Skies of Glass game, you were playing a veterinarian, and very early on in the game, I saw to it that there were significant things involving, because it's a survival game, involving things like horses and genetically engineered animals and such that required your attention.
And I'll be honest, I picked veterinarian because I thought it would be funny to be a vet doing the medical work on your characters.
Going back to what you guys were saying about RP and kind of tying into this, making them understand their character is special and needed, is on an RP level, force them into the spotlight, but not too heavily and not too quickly. Because if you simply sit there and wait for them to jump in, and this is a know your audience thing, as Chris said, depending on the person, they might, if they're really outgoing. But other people really may not understand how this RP thing works. And the best thing you can do if you want them to swim is put them in the pool. And so have a situation come up once they've kind of seen some of the interactions around the table, they kind of get a sense of how it works. Have something come up where an NPC directly asks them a question or starts talking to them and draws them into the RP.
And, you know, I was petrified that you were going to do that. And after it was over, I was thankful. It was one of the things going in. I was nervous. I'd never done anything like this, never been part of the hobby. And I was afraid I was going to be put in the spotlight, expected to do something. And after it was over, it's like, okay, that wasn't bad at all.
Oh, the hazing things we had in store for you that you just skirted around. We were so disappointed.
Apparently, all I had to do was make a crude joke, and I was in like that.
Yeah, we're easy. You know what? You were fantastic.
Well, something else that really helped, though, actually, was the involvement of the players in this. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was not just on me as a GM to explain things, to draw him in, to have NPCs approach him. You guys as players were part of that effort. One of the things we stress on this show all the time is a successful game is a team effort. And that's true with this as well. And you guys really went out of your way to have your characters address his character or ask his character for ideas. Or in the case of the people that were more rules conscious, like Dave, to point out things on his character sheet or things that he was capable of or things that he might be better at than anybody else. Because ultimately what's going on here is a social interaction. And obviously, the more people in a, let's just say a party, like, I don't mean an RP party, I mean like, you know, music and beer party. The more people at a party that talk to you, the more welcome you're going to feel. If just one guy comes up and shakes your hand, you still feel pretty on the outside. Same thing's true at a gaming table. The more people that get involved in making you feel like you're a part of the action, the better you're going to feel. And so even if you're not running a game, there is still an enormous amount you can do to demonstrate some kind of affinity to that player or their character and get them drawn into everything.
You know, and that was one of the things, I don't think I could have asked for a better group to start with than the way we did, going from the Skies of Glass game into this revolving GM one. I've now, within the course of a year, played two different systems, as well as had my first opportunity to GM without having to do a whole campaign. I have 2 weeks of it, and I really enjoyed that, and it was something I wanted to know if I was capable of doing, but would have never jumped out and said, I want to run a campaign, because just wouldn't have been comfortable doing that. But I'll run 2 weeks of a campaign until I get more comfortable.
Was there anything that you felt we did wrong, could have done better, maybe even things we did really right that you want to make sure is emphasized to people listening to this show?
I did have a few times in the first, basically in the first couple games where it's, I have no idea what I'm supposed to roll. But you guys really did help me through that. I mean, the big thing was, you guys really went out of your way to make me feel at home down there. Basically, everyone talking right away, trying to involve me. You know, Dan, you brought in the Crown Royal bag, so I would have the same bag as everyone else. And
I actually have that on here as one of my things. This was something I learned from Tex. This was back when he used to real heavily play both Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy. This would have been 40K second edition. I don't know what edition Fantasy was on at the time. I never picked up Fantasy. But he had this policy of the first one is free. And with Skies of Glass, it was hard because I couldn't get you a rule book because there is no rule book. It was just notes on pieces of paper and sketches in Excel and MS Word that I was piecing together. But
and actually, I had printouts of all of those in a notebook. I was a bit of the overachiever, and Chad made fun of me a little bit for that.
But that Crown Royal bag was my way of carrying on Texas tradition of just like a drug dealer, the first one's free.
And you know the funny thing about that? I had gone out and bought a small red bag that I was keeping my dice in until you brought that in. So I don't have a lot of dice at this point. I'm just starting out, had just a few dice in there. So the bag looked ridiculously empty. So I take my copy of Zombie Flux, I put it in my red bag, I fill it in. So ever since then, my wife makes fun of me every week when I go to the game that I'm stuffing my dice back.
I love it.
But you know, whether it's a dice bag or rule book, it's just giving the person some kind of a physical accoutrement of the hobby.
I took that as a key. And then after Fear the Con, I went out and bought my wife a, because she went to Fear the Con too. She also played in Chris's D&D for Beginners game. And she has some interest in it, but it's more of a, she wants to go every year to the con. So I went out and bought her a bag of the Harry Potter's All Flavors Bernie Botts beans. And that's her dice bag, because she's a big Harry Potter fan.
Cool.
And she got a huge kick out of having her dice in a Harry Potter Bernie Botts bag.
Hey, whatever works, man. I mean, that's cool. If it, you know, if it helps them get into it, that's good. You know, one thing else that kind of strikes me, and this is, I don't know if this is be considered advice for new players, but in all honesty, go out and get some.
Really? Chris, where does this occur? Where would you recommend?
Dan, but I'm going to move to his gaming group.
Hell yeah. How long of a drive is it up to Iowa again?
Yeah, really. Come on up, man. Hey, you know what, though? I run a damn good session. It'll be worth the drive. But no, what I'm saying is that there is no better way to get people into the hobby than by going out and getting them. I mean, it sounds weird, but I mean,
it sounds sexual.
Yeah. Well, you go ahead and get them. But I mean, you know, you get comfortable with your own group, but it's a good thing.
You want to try something new,
to bring in new players.
On the side.
Whether it's you experiment in college, you can always experiment later on in life as well. No, but I mean, you you know, whether it's putting up a thing in, you know, local gaming store, in a library, wherever it might be, go out and seek out new players and at the very least get them introduced.
Chris,
to the
do
hobby
you use Craigslist?
Because you're doing yourself a favor, because a lot of times what happens, you know, when you're in a veteran group and you've been playing for a while, you get very, very comfortable with how things work, and you kind of forget some of the coolness factors that exist in RPGs that you only rediscover when you have new players at the table, when it's all new for them. And so it's kind of a nice little refresher thing, and whether or not they stay in the group with you or not, it's a nice thing to kind of keep the group fresh, maybe get into some new blood, some new direction, and also get somebody else interested.
You know, and that's one thing I really have to give Chad. He is a spokesman for the hobby. Everywhere he goes, he's handing out the business cards. He's talking about it. We burned him some copies of the Fear the Boot 115. He keeps them on his desk, just gives them out.
I believe it's two copies.
Common sense thing. This is actually the last time on my list. You guys feel free to add to this. Go easy on them in combat. Kicking their ass and killing their character in the first game is not going to endear them to the hobby. I realize, you know, we can debate the whole risk-reward player-killing thing till we're blue in the face, but the fact is, taking somebody their first time out on the tennis court and beating their ass is not going to endear them to the game of tennis. And it's the same thing with role-playing games. Just smearing them when they don't even really know what they're doing, that's not an accomplishment. That just makes you an asshole. And keep that in mind. I mean, I would like to think that's common sense, and for most people listening to this, I'm sure it is, but...
Yeah, just... It is pretty funny, though. It's like, oh, you got owned, buddy. Guess you shouldn't have done that, noob.
Yeah, the use of noob probably should be avoided as well.
Okay, I think that's going to go ahead and wrap it up for this episode. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Remember to stick around, because I don't know if I'm going to put it before or after the credits, but Julie Hussey is going to address you regarding the Power 16-2. And
I want to get addressed by Julie.
Okay, Pat.
Well, you do that while Chris is going out and getting some.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I'm going out and getting some. So.
Yeah.
As for everyone else, we will catch you next time.
Later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.
My fellow gamers, or those of you who are gamers, not me, of course. I'm just married to one. If there's anyone out there who doubts that the world of gaming is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if dreams of our founders is still alive in our time, who still questions the power of your dice, tonight is your answer. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, storyteller and rules, lawyers, fat beard, cheese weasel, furry, and LARPer. Gamers who sent a message to the world that we have never been a collection of individuals or a collection, D&Ders and NWADs. We will always be simply gamers. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to the gaming world. Earlier this evening, I received an incredibly gracious call from Baron Von Badass. Aside from telling me that he liked the tasty baked goods I made for him, we talked of this most important contest. The Baron fought long and hard in this campaign, and he fought longer and harder for the NPCs he controls. I congratulate them on their efforts, and I look forward to working with them to renew this nation's promise in the months ahead. We have come so far. We have seen so much. But there is so much more to do. So tonight, let us ask ourselves, if our children should live to see the next century, what change will they see? What progress will we have made? What tasty treat will they eat around the table at Fear the Con? This is our moment. This is our time to set our GM screens upright, to defeat major NPCs with a lucky shot, to open doors of opportunity for new gamers, to promote prosperity and restore the cause of peace at the gaming table, to reclaim the worldwide dream and proclaim and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many, we are one. That while we breathe, we hope, and where we are met with cynicism and doubt, and those who tell us we can't, we will respond with that creed that sums up the spirit of the people. Yes, we can. Thank you. May Paylor bless you and the United States of Gaming.